Welcome to the second half of the doubleheader of MMA Lockcast episodes we have this week, because we got Bellator Champion Series Belfast going down this week. And yes, they have officially ditched the numbers. I believe this would have been Bellator 303 or 302, but it seems as though they're completely ditching the numbers now and then just going with Bellator Champion Series wherever they're going to be hosted. So this weekend, obviously, they're over there in Belfast. We got two title fights on tap as well at the top of the card. But obviously, we got some great fights sprinkled out throughout the rest of it as well. A good mixture of PFL and Bellator fighters going against each other. A lot more emphasis on, obviously, the Bellator fighters, of course, because it is the Bellator brand. Apparently, they even have a new belt that they've unveiled on their Instagram page. But it just looks a little bit more bedazzled. They have a PFL logo on the side of it as well. The main portion of the belt is still Bellator, they're trying to change it up. You know, Don Davis was on the MMA Hour earlier today, and he talked about the fact that they want to just, you know, inject some new life into Bellator's production as well. So look forward to seeing new things on the production side of things. Chael is one of the guys that was confirmed to be on the commentating duties, as well as Sean O'Connell, who obviously does the PFL stuff. They're going to have Big John McCarthy doing like a referee type thing, just as he did for the PFL Paris card. Intriguing. I'm really looking forward to seeing what this new product for Bellator will be looking like once we actually get to the fights on Friday evening, or it might actually end up being Friday afternoon considering it's across the pond. It's going to be on HBO Max if you're in the US. I believe it's on the Fight Network if you're in Canada. And then I'm not sure where they're going to do it internationally. Maybe DAZN, maybe on YouTube. I'm not 100% sure. But Bellator is back. That's the main thing here. And obviously, I'll be dropping MMA Lockcast episodes for them, as well as all the regular season main roster PFL cards as well. So PFL Paris, PFL Middle East, which is going to be starting up soon as well. Those are going to be considered regional MMA events. So I'll only be doing written breakdowns for those cards. They might be my bonus monthly breakdown as well, but I only do one of those a month on the YouTube page. But that's too much jibber jabber. We're talking about Bellator Belfast this weekend. Again, it goes down on Friday. I believe we have 11 fights lined up for it here, and I'm going to do it in a kind of a brief type of breakdown scenario for you guys and not take too much time with breaking these fights down. All right. I do want to quickly say, though, if you are looking for breakdowns for LFA and Octagon, which go down this weekend as well, you guys can find that on the Lock of the Night Patreon page. Link for that is in the description below. I'll be getting to work on that very shortly, so make sure you guys keep your eyes peeled for that as those fights go down on Saturday as well. So plenty of MMA for us to chew on for Friday and Saturday, and plenty of fights for me to break down for you guys as well, which is what I love doing anyway. All right, this is a juicy card in terms of the fact that we got some pretty damn good underdogs that we should be taking advantage of this weekend, and hopefully we can have a very fruitful weekend as well. So let's get right into it. First fight of the night is actually an amateur fight between Nate Kelly, who comes in at minus 500. He goes up against Jordan Elliott, who comes in at plus 375. Now, Nate Kelly is a fighter that the PFL has taken invested interest into, as they did actually have him on the PFL Europe card. But you don't often see them having amateur fights on their cards. The only other guy they've really done that for is Biagio Ali Walsh, who is now a pro, but they gave him a handful of fights on the card, usually kicking off the card in an amateur capacity, so he can build some momentum, build some experience, and then eventually turn pro with them and then end up possibly becoming a PFL lifer or something like that. That's what they're doing with Nate Kelly. Nate Kelly is the kid from 8-9 years ago that went to a McGregor and Aldo press conference and was saying, I'm going to be a future champion. He was already, you know, in the striking sports and the grappling sports and all of that stuff. But I gotta say, not overly impressed with the kid. He's 2-2 through his first four amateur fights. He's gotten out-grappled in both of his losses. That's where it seems like he still needs a little bit of work, but he's got the fundamentals down. He knows the chokes. He goes for the chokes. Sometimes he's a little bit overzealous with seeking the chokes and not really establishing the position required to sink in the chokes and actually get the tap. His striking looks fluid. It looks like he's really trying to emulate McGregor with that, you know, quick straight down the pipe, the wide stance, the karate type style stance. He's fast. He's young as fuck. He's still only 19 years old. So those are the things that he's really relying on early in his career to try to be utilize those traits to be successful. Now, last time around, he's fighting a guy that was going to look to grapple him, but the guy was too slow. Carl Seaton, I believe was his name was. He was a sitting duck on the feet, which allowed Kelly to kind of dictate the pace of that fight. And then when he did shoot for takedowns, he was just too slow and was unable to secure any sort of dominant position, allowing Kelly to kind of just, you know, use him as monkey bars, essentially, and eventually sink in that choke in the second round. Here against Jordan Elliott, Elliott's on a 3-fight losing streak. His victories, which were the first two fights in his career, came with a grapple-heavy approach, but he's going up against some scrubs. In his last couple fights, he's been outstruck, he's been outgrappled, and he looks like a guy that once he's behind, he doesn't really have the ability to build up momentum to try to rally some a comeback. His striking, not that bad. His grappling, not that bad. But I think that Kelly is just a little bit too... will have more finesse in his striking, will have more finesse in his grappling, and I think that'll allow him to eventually get some sort of choke in the second or third round. Minus 500, though, not worth it in my opinion. You know, Elliott is 9 years older than him, seems to be the stronger of the two as well, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's able to put Kelly into some uncomfortable positions and ride him out. And again, remember, these are only 3-minute rounds. Those 3 minutes tick off the clock pretty quickly. So if Kelly finds himself in a bad position, there's a chance that he might not be able to work out of those spots. But I feel like his technical jiu-jitsu may end up being better than what Elliott brings to the table, which should allow Kelly to eventually sink in his submission and get the tap here. But minus 500, absolutely insane in my opinion. But again, this seems to be a setup spot for Kelly to try to go out there and continue to gain experience so that the PFL can profit from him as he continues to build his name. All right, moving on to the next fight. We got Abraham Babley coming in at minus 185. He goes up against Isaiah Pinson. Now, this is a fight that has a lot of question marks for me in the fact that why is Babley such a big favorite here? Yes, he is undefeated. Yes, he's been able to go out there, take opponents to the ground and smash them from that top position. But this might be the toughest fight of his career. Pinson comes from a football background, but has taken to MMA very well. He's undefeated. He's beaten tougher opponents than Babley's faced as well, and showcased that he can go a hard 15 minutes and have good cardio the entire time. His striking is improving. His defensive grappling is improving as well in terms of his ability to stop takedowns or at least immediately work back to his feet. And he's a bigger heavyweight than Babley. Babley, in my opinion, his best shot to win this fight is try to get a knockout early on the feet. He might be able to land a takedown or two, but I don't believe in his ability to hold Pinson down. This will allow Pinson to continuously work back to his feet and then put the pressure on Babley with a better, more well-rounded striking game. Babley is a guy that significantly slows down in his matchups and usually just relies on big bursts of power punches or the eventual takedown to take his opponents back to the mat where he's able to just lay on them and control them. But Pinson's not going to accept a bad position, in my opinion. I think Pinson should be favored in this matchup, and I'm very freaking confident in Pinson in this spot. I'd be surprised if Babley is able to hold him down. If Babley knocks him out in the first round, I'll take that loss on the chin here. But if this is somehow going into the second and third rounds, that's where I really think we'll see Pinson start to take over and really start to put the hurting on Babley and possibly even get a late finish here. For prediction's sake, I'm going to say Pinson by decision, but I might even sprinkle a little bit of that round three prop if they end up dropping it, which they have not, at least at the time of this recording. But give me Pinson and Pinson by decision. The odds should be flipped in this fight, in my opinion. That's all I'm going to say. All right, moving on to the next fight here. Nathan Kelly coming in at minus 1,000 goes up against Vikas Singh Ruhil, who comes in at plus 700 as a Canadian of Indian descent. It's very unfortunate to see some of the Indian talent that we have in the mixed martial arts world and the low level in which they're able to compete at, especially when they get brought into the PFL, Bellator, or even in the UFC. They're very much behind the times in terms of the skill set required to be successful at this level. Now, Ruhil on the regional scene normally has been able to take his opponents to the ground and smash them from that top position or sink in a choke, but when he fights the more skilled competition like he did against James Gonzalez last time around, he was unable to get off on any of his success. He got picked apart on the feet at Avinci, finished with some ground and pound. He's going to struggle with Nathan Kelly here, who's better than him in every aspect of this matchup. I think he's even the better grappler. So even if Ruhel wants to try to take this to the mat, I could see him getting reversed almost immediately and then eventually put into a submission. I think Kelly smashes here. There's no need to go too deep into this matchup. There's a reason he's minus 1,000. I think he finishes this fight inside the distance without too much issue at all. My only qualm, the under 1.5 is super chalky. This might be one of those spots where Kelly might just look to take his time with the striking and wait for that perfect shot with the striking to eventually show itself. And that might leak into the 7th or 8th minute of this fight. But I still think Kelly smashes here. I think he wins inside the distance. All right, moving on to the next fight, we got Luke Trainer coming in at plus 140. He's going up against Grant Neal, who comes in at minus 160. Now, we've been seeing some solid line movement on this. If I'm not mistaken, Grant Neal was actually the small underdog late last week, and now he's had solid movement come in on him over the last couple of days to push him up to minus 160. Now, Luke Trainer is a big light heavyweight. He's 6'6". I believe he has an 81-inch reach as well, and he utilizes every inch of that. His only defeat came at the hands of Simon Byung, I believe it was, who was able to hurt him badly in 2 out of the 3 rounds. But even in those rounds that Trainer was hurt bad in, he was able to battle back in those rounds and still make a good account of himself. Unfortunately, it was not enough to nullify him getting hurt as badly as he did in those matchups. But Trainer is a very well-rounded fighter. He uses his length very well. Great striker, has some sneaky submissions, is improving his takedown defense, which allowed him to go out there and give Sullivan Cully the first loss of his professional career. And I think he's a very well-rounded fighter, especially with the head coach that he has in Brad Pickett. Grant Neal, on the other hand, is a fighter that I've relied on in the past to cash some tickets for me. This guy grinds very well. He's able to take his opponents up against the cage, drag them to the ground, grind them up from that top position. He's very strong, but as you see him taking steps up in competition, it's getting harder for him to implement that style. That split decision win that he had against Carl Albrechtsen, very close fight. He used the benefit of a couple key controlling spots that allowed him to get the decision that night. But there were other fights where we see him starting to slow down and things start to get shaky for him. Trainer is going to make him work the entire time, and I'd be very surprised if Neal is able to keep Trainer contained and keep Trainer from getting off on his own striking and his own output, which could potentially cause a lot of problems for Neal in this spot. It will obviously be heavily Neal in the beginning of this fight. I think he'll have success with his takedowns and control, but as we start getting into deeper waters, we'll see Trainer get back to his feet a little bit easier, and we'll see him get off on his strikes, utilize his speed. As long as he stays away from the big power of Neal, which is capable of putting him out as well, I think he should be safe at distance and picking apart Neal, landing the more damaging shots, nullifying the control of Neal, and potentially even getting a third round stoppage here. So I'm kind of surprised at the swing in odds here. Like, I thought maybe it would settle around Neal around minus 130, minus 140, but it seems like more money is coming in on Neal. I'm not with it. I cast Trainer as a big dog against Sullivan Cully. I'm hoping we can do so once again here against Grant Neal, which would be bittersweet. Again, Neal is a guy that I've leaned on in the past, but I just don't think he'll be able to get away with it here. All right, moving on to the next matchup, we got Alfie Davis coming in at minus 425. He goes up against Oscar Onsworth, who comes in at plus 325. Now, both these guys classify themselves as strikers, but I think we see Davis have more experience against legitimate opponents. Both of these guys have been pushed back in the past and are able to successfully strike from their back foot, but I think that Davis has a little bit more tricks up his sleeve. You know, whether it's him trying to look for some grappling, mixing in some takedowns behind his striking, which would catch Onsworth off off guard. Onsworth has improved his takedown defense and his ability to work back to his feet, but I think Davis has, you know, suffered from similar things from Onsworth in the fact that, you know, they've mainly been fighting guys that try to take them to the mat. The last loss on Davis's record is to Alexander Shabli, who's going to be fighting for the title in May against Usman Nurmagomedov. But Davis, I think he's just a little bit cleaner. This fight may be a little bit closer than the odds suggest, which is why I'm not too hot on taking this Davis chalk at minus 425. But I do think we see Davis pretty much control the majority of this matchup. And I think it'll ultimately be his takedowns and control that he's going to be able to establish that will differentiate him on the scorecards and eventually allow him to get the judge's nod here, like I said, by decision. All right, moving on to the next one, we got Kieran Clark coming in at minus 1,200. He goes up against Darius Mafi, who comes in at plus 750. Now, Clark is a guy in the past who I don't mind taking the heavy chalk on and throwing him into parlays because he has a reliable style of going out there and grinding his opponents out. He's been put in some sticky situations as he's been hurt badly in some fights, but the referees allow him to fight long enough to eventually get back into the game, get back to the grappling and to that control style he usually brings to the table. He doesn't overextend in the grappling too often, which, you know, means that he doesn't often go for submissions, but if he sees the opportunity there, he'll try to seize it and he'll try to pick up that submission victory. His opponent this weekend, Darius Mafi, has been absolutely can crushing thus far on the regional scene. The combined record of his opponents at the time he faced them is 29-76. Take out the guy that beat him, which was Ali Taleb, and you're looking at 22-76. He's just going out there slamming these guys to the mat and then brutalizing them from that top position or sinking in chokes and getting them to tap. He's strong. He's intimidating. I'm sure he's going to be tough to deal with inside the clinch, but he's going to be leaving openings for Clark to take advantage of, and I think we'll see Clark wrap up a submission at a certain point. Minus 1200 is just a little bit too wide for me here. You know, Clark does have his flaws, not the greatest striker. Mafi might be able to land a big strike on the feet and put Clark out. That's absolutely possible, but there's nothing I've seen from Mafi that makes me believe that he's worthy of taking even a little bit of a sprinkle at plus 750. But minus 1200 does nothing for parlays, especially in a fight where I have some question marks about how good Mafi actually is and the potential threat that he could provide here. So a little bit of a question mark fight here. I'm going to pass on it, but I'm going to take Clark by submission, which I believe is plus 105 as a prop. So if you want to take a poke on that, go ahead. All right, moving on to the next fight here. We got Tim Wilde coming in at minus 120. He goes up against Manuel Sosa, who comes in at plus 100. Now, Tim Wilde is on a very solid run as he is 5-0-1 over his last six fights. He's gone out there and showcased very good takedown defense, even better get-ups, and then sticking with his unorthodox, somewhat wild striking style has allowed him to be successful in this stage of his career. I believe he's going to be 37 a few months down the road, but he is showing no signs of slowing down. He often changes stances when he's striking, throws some spinning stuff, some flying stuff, likes to land that 1-2 down the pipe, has a good kicking game as well. But what has really impressed me, as I touched on already, is his ability to work back to his feet. In that fight against Mike Hamill, we saw him, you know, in one of the takedown scenarios, immediately framing on the face of Mike Hamill, getting his guard back, throwing up a submission when he saw an opportunity for it, but not so much to try to lock up the armbar, but more so to create the scramble so he can work back to his feet and get back to the striking advantage that he held in that matchup. Very good stuff there. The fight that really put me put him on my radar was the Chris Gonzalez fight, where I expected Gonzalez to run through him with his wrestling, but he was doing a great job in terms of stopping the takedowns and keeping Gonzalez at range with his lateral footwork and his kicking game from distance. Gonzalez had no answer for it at all. Manuel Sosa is a power puncher who has recently tried to utilize his grapple-heavy approach to get his wins. Last time we saw him over a year ago on the PFL Challenger Series platform, where he went to a split decision against Paulo Henrique in a very close grappling matchup, where we saw Sosa latch onto a lot of submission attempts, but unable to complete any of them, more so to try to reverse the position or end up getting back to his feet. But right after that, he would look to get the fight back to the ground where he was able to control his opponent. This is a guy that utilizes a lot of power and a lot of energy, which usually causes him to slow down later on in matchups, and I think that will ultimately be the difference maker here for Tim Wilde. If Sosa wants to try to take Wilde to the ground, I think he's going to struggle in terms of holding him there, and the continuous activity and output of Wilde will really start to frustrate Sosa, leave openings for Wilde to take advantage of that, and we could potentially see Wilde run away with this in deep waters. My only concern is if Sosa's strength is too much for Wilde to deal with, allowing Sosa to enjoy some more top control time, or even Sosa's striking background could potentially allow him to land a beautiful counter here that puts Wilde's lights out clean, which is why I won't be able to get to the betting window here. But I still feel Wilde has more paths to victory here, more reliable paths to victory. I think he can win inside the distance. I think he can win by decision. My ultimate prediction here is going to be Tim Wilde, to win this fight on the scorecards. All right, moving on, we got James Gallagher coming in at plus 100, going up against Leandro Higo, who comes in at minus 120. Now, the last time we saw James Gallagher was him returning from nearly a two-year-long layoff, and he utilized a grapple-heavy approach to defeat James Gonzalez. That night, he landed takedowns in the first and second rounds, and he was able to control the top position. But we saw him start to slow down in that third round, which is where Gonzalez was able to have success. Even while being controlled through the first two rounds, Gonzalez was quite active off of his back. That one judge actually scored that fight in his favor. Gallagher is a BJJ black belt who has often looked to take his opponents to the ground and either find a submission, which he was able to do throughout the beginning of his Bellator career, but now he's taking tougher fights. It's been harder for him to secure that. He's been spending time at Bang Tao Muay Thai in Thailand, but also an SBG branch of a gym where it seems like the training is very much personalized to him. I don't know if 145 pounds is where he's going to truly be able to find success, and I think that's we're going to see that him run into some trouble here against the veteran Leandro Higo. Now, Higo strikes similar to like the Pitbull brothers, who he trains with, very wild and reckless on the feet, but he's very aggressive with his submission game as well, which is why he has 14 out of his 22 wins coming by submission. This is a spot where I think he can provide enough resistance to James Gallagher's grapple heavy approach and then make Gallagher uncomfortable on the feet, which could potentially open up another submission opportunity for Higo. What gives me a little bit of pause is Higo, 35 years old, might be starting to slow down here. We've seen him get out grappled in the past, but I just don't think that Gallagher has that full control ability to keep Higo on his back, to stay away from the sub attempts that are going to be coming his way, and then to be safe enough in the feet, in the striking realm, especially when this fight gets into deeper waters. So I'm going to go with Higo here, and I think he opens up a club and sub opportunity for himself in the second or third round. All right, moving on to this next matchup here. We got Fabian Edwards coming in at minus 145. He goes up against Aaron Jeffrey, who comes in at plus 115. Edwards is looking to bounce back from his title losing effort to Johnny Eblen a couple months back, where he was being somewhat competitive in the striking realm through the first two rounds, as he did a great job in terms of stopping the takedowns that were coming from Johnny Eblen and forcing Eblen to strike. Unfortunately, it was Eblen who was able to land a beautiful elbow in the third round to drop Edwards, and from there he was able to get the ground and pound finish to get the victory. But Edwards will be looking to bounce back here and showcasing his newly acquired takedown defense skills to try to keep this fight upright against Aaron Jeffrey, who is an absolute menace inside the clinch, especially when he's able to get his grappling going. It was very discouraging to see Jeffrey lose that fight to John Salter a couple fights back, but he made it up in his last matchup, as he handed Dalton Rasta's first professional loss, keeping that fight upright, showcasing his takedown defense, and absolutely battering Dalton Rasta while doing so. I think that we'll see Jeffrey try to engage in the clinch, maybe not so much try to take the fight to the ground, but I think we'll see him try to push Fabian up against the cage and just do what he does best, rough up his opponents, use dirty boxing, knees up the middle, kneeing the Charlie horsing him, essentially trying to work him against the cage. But I think that we'll see Edwards work out of those bad spots and get back out into open space, where I feel he is the better technical striker. He should be able to chew up the lead leg of Aaron Jeffrey here, which will make it harder for Jeffrey to close the distance, and from there Edwards should be able to touch him up. And I think he goes on to win a decision here. As a Canadian, I'm going to be rooting for Aaron Jeffrey in the spot, but I think that this is a bad stylistic matchup if he is unable to establish that clinch-heavy approach that he normally brings to the table. But I think Edwards touches him up at distance, lands the better damage, the more eye-catching damage from distance, and that ultimately gets him the nod on the scorecards. All right, first of two title fights up, we got the featherweight title on the line, as we have the champion coming in as the underdog. Patricio Pitbull comes in at plus 105. Jeremy Kennedy comes in at minus 125. Now, for the first time in his career, Pitbull is finding himself on a two-fight losing streak, which might be why he finds himself as the underdog in this matchup. Now, let's put those losses into context, as the first of which came against Sergio Pettis, which was Pitbull's attempt at being the first fighter to achieve three titles in three different weight classes. A title in three different weight classes for a major MMA promotion, and Pitbull came up short to that, as we saw Sergio Pettis pretty much out strike him, land the better shots, and ultimately win that fight on the scorecards. Then Pitbull, a month later, took a super short notice matchup for Rizin and ended up getting knocked out in the second round against a relatively unknown Japanese fighter. Now, Pitbull was initially slated to come back earlier this year to take on Jesus Pinedo in the Bellator versus PFL championship matchup, but Pinedo was forced to pull out. In stepped Gabriel Alves Braga, who was forced to pull out, I believe, on fight day or weigh-in day. And now Pitbull is turning his attention to Jeremy Kennedy this weekend to go out there and try to defend his featherweight title. We know what Pitbull is good at. Sometimes he could take a grapple-heavy approach and grind his opponents out on the mat, or he goes out there and uses a tactically intelligent striking game to utilize that power and hurt his opponents and just chip away at them with his striking style. Jeremy Kennedy is a grapple first fighter. This guy likes to take opponents to the ground, grind them up against the cage, and just put a pace on them that they're not able to keep up with. That's what he was successful with last time around when he defeated Pedro Carvalho to earn this title shot. Kennedy is one of the better Canadian fighters that we currently have in these major organizations because of how dominant he can be when he is able to establish that grapple-heavy approach. His striking still leaves a little bit to be desired here in the fact that he's not the most effective in terms of landing crazy damage in that striking realm, but he does a good job in terms of blending his takedowns and his clinch initiations behind his striking. But he's going up against a very experienced and talented Patricio Pitbull. In the past, I've said Pitbull has a very beatable style, but I don't know if Kennedy is the guy that's going to be able to go out there and exploit that. To me, Pitbull might be a little bit too disciplined, too calculated, too patient in terms of his striking, which allows opponents that can put on more numbers on him to get ahead of him. But I think that Kennedy is going to struggle to establish that type of style, as I think he'll fail on most of his takedown attempts, or at least fail in terms of trying to keep Pitbull on the mat. And then in the striking realm, whenever Kennedy does start to get off on his strikes, he might get caught with some big counters from Pitbull. We might even see Pitbull chew up the lead leg of Jeremy Kennedy in the spot as well. Again, I don't often back Pitbull. I even faded him against Sergio Pettersson, cashed out in that matchup. But I feel this is a bad matchup for Jeremy Kennedy. And I'm a big Jeremy Kennedy fan. That's my boy. That's my guy. But when I'm doing these breakdowns for you guys, I got to be unbiased in these spots. I got to go with Pitbull, especially at underdog odds here. Plus 105 on a champion of Pitbull's caliber. You know, two losses. We can't just completely write this guy off yet. I think this is a good stylistic matchup for him to go out there and defend his title once again and win this fight, likely on the scorecards. If a big enough opportunity presents itself to counter and put Kennedy out, it's possible, but Kennedy has some good enough durability. I just don't think it's going to look good enough on the judges' scorecards when he looks a little bit more damaged than what Pitbull will be showcasing here. So give me Pitbull and still by decision. All right, that lines us up for our vacant light heavyweight fight here between Corey Anderson, who comes in at minus 500, taking on Carl Moore, who comes in at plus 375. Now, Corey Anderson obviously is coming off of a split decision victory over Phil Davis last time around in a fight where both guys were kind of nullifying their wrestling, but it was ultimately Anderson's output and ability to land more judge-pleasing shots on the feet that got him the decision that night. He came up short in his title fight efforts against Vadim Nemkov twice, although the first one looked like it was very much going his way in a fight that he was likely going to end up winning, but an accidental headbutt caused that fight to go to a no contest. It was later revealed that Nemkov was very sick going into that matchup as well, which probably explained why Nemkov was so dominant in his following matchup with Corey Anderson, shutting down all of Anderson's game and absolutely touching him up on the feet, winning that fight on the scorecards. But I think that this is the type of fight Anderson needs to get that Bellator gold, right? He's 4-1 since joining Bellator in 2020, pretty much running through most of his opposition. We know what he's about. High-level wrestling, high output, high activity, good striking, good blending, wrestling behind the striking. And I think that's going to ultimately be too much for Carl Moore here. Moore is a guy that normally likes to implement his own wrestle-heavy approach, but I don't think he's going to out-wrestle Corey Anderson here. He might be able to land some good shots on Anderson. He could potentially even knock him out. That's absolutely on the table, which is why I'm not so like, well, you know what? I do like Corey Anderson a good deal here. Knockout shots happen at any time in any matchup. So that's always on the table, no matter the matchup. But I feel here for Corey Anderson, he'll do a great job in terms of crashing the pocket, getting Carl Williams to the ground, wearing on him, taking his energy out of him, And I think that opens up opportunities for Anderson to eventually get a third, fourth, or fifth round stoppage, which are the props that I'm going to be zoning in on for this fight. So I really like Corey Anderson here to do Corey Anderson things, which hopefully doesn't entail getting knocked out. But I think that we finally see him strap some gold around his waist by defeating Carl Moore, with relative easier and getting his hand raised inside the distance, round three, round four, round five. I'm thinking TKO via ground and pound. There you guys go. Breakdowns on all 11 fights for this Bellator Belfast card. Appreciate all the love and support as always. Reminder, there's a ton of UFC Vegas 89 content already on the YouTube channel, not to mention already on the Patreon page. What else you can find on the Patreon page is going to be breakdowns for LFA and Octagon, which also go down on Saturday. So if you guys want some extra action, that's where you guys will be able to find it. Let's see if we can continue to build off the momentum that we got for our massive UFC Vegas 88 card we had this last weekend. Let's keep that rolling into this weekend. Appreciate all the love and support. Check out all the other content. Otherwise, I will see you guys tomorrow for the Locky Two-Step Free Parlay, which has been doing pretty well, and the Quick Picks Breakdown for UFC Vegas 89. I'll see you guys then. Peace.
And congratulations on achieving your goal.
Last thing.